3-day trial over access to subsistence fishing grounds wraps up, and the Haynesboro Assembly okays the harbor 95% design. It's the KHNS Local News. I'm Jillian Rogers. Those stories up next. Superior Court Judge Philip Pallenberg heard closing arguments on Wednesday in the case of Rosalie and Reuben Lowen versus the State of Alaska Department of Natural Resources and co-defendants. The trial centered on vehicular access to a popular hooligan fishing spot on the Chilkoot River, owned for 7 years by the Lowens. The issue at heart in this case is simple. Tlingit subsistence users say they've had unfettered access to the river for centuries and want to continue their traditional way of life, which has evolved to include the use of vehicles without interference. The landowners, the Lowens, agree that traditional values and customs are important, but they just don't want trucks driving down to the river for fear of disturbing sensitive habitat. They said fishing there is fine if users walk up and down the bank instead of driving. The Lowens testified first in the trial on Monday, which took place over 3 days in Haynes and Juneau.
People can walk down there, that's fine. We have no problems with pedestrian use.
There are lots of interested parties that come and use this piece of land, and it's such a key part for everybody. It's a key part for the natives who have cultural and traditional practices that center around this river. It's huge for tourists and for fishermen, and also it's our backyard. It's the only land that we own, and I have to do just the best that I know how to do.
Interveners in the case include three Native agencies. Many local Tlingit subsistence users testified on Monday and Tuesday. Sonny Williams is the president of the local chapter of the Alaska Native Brotherhood. He called the whole issue heartbreaking.
The Tlingit people have fished up there for a long time. They've always taken care of the river before anybody came here.
The case shifted from the Lowens' quest to obtain quiet title, a legal process that removes an adverse claim on a property on part of their land, to the issue of vehicle access to the river. Native users said vehicles are necessary for bringing down elders and hauling out thousands of pounds of fish. The defendants also claim there is a state right-of-way that provides open public access. Driving down in pickup trucks has become a common occurrence over the past several decades, and Native users maintain it's necessary. And while the use of vehicles might be relatively recent, Tim Ackerman said Monday that historically, big pits were dug on the banks to store and ferment the hooligan. Nowadays, most of the harvest is hauled to Klukwan. Schlepping buckets of fish up and down the riverbank would be cumbersome and potentially dangerous, Ackerman said.
We don't block access to the IGA grocery store and say you can't go in here anymore. I'm sorry.
Reuben Lowen says when he first noticed people driving down a few years ago, he simply went down and asked them to stop. Then he said he put up signs asking people not to drive down. But witnesses said in court they never saw those signs. They did, however, see rocks and logs, and eventually, last year, a boulder placed in the middle of the trail. Reuben said he put the boulder on what he thinks is his property. But with chains and a come-along, the fishermen moved the rock out of the way to access the river. Klukwan Sally Buratine testified that she gave the go-ahead to move the boulder. It resulted in an exchange between Buratine and Rosalie Lowen.
The language was no good. In my face.
So what, are you referring to one of the Lowens?
Mrs. Lowen.
All right, what did she say to you?
She called me all kinds of bad names.
But Rosalie maintained in court that she worked hard to prevent the situation from escalating.
I have handled all kinds of aggressive inquiries, including those by Sally Buratine, to say pretty calmly, I don't believe what you're doing is right. And I don't think that's rude. I think that's acceptable.
One of the confusing parts about this case is just how big the state's right-of-way is. Surveys and land plats show a right-of-way of 60 feet, but some show 30 feet and others show 100. John Bennett, a longtime surveyor and right-of-way expert, was called to the stand by the co-defendants. He said after copious amounts of research, he deduced that the stretch of road is subject to a 100-foot right-of-way. If that's the case, only a tiny sliver of the Lowens' land would be on the driving path to the river, but it's a sliver nonetheless. Lowen's lawyer Daniel Bruce questioned Bennett's conclusions, asking why the Department of Transportation paperwork shows a lesser 60-foot right-of-way.
All of the official plats and filings by the state, their official position was it was 60 feet, wasn't it?
That was what they were representing, you know, but sometimes they're incorrect.
In closing arguments on Wednesday, Bruce said that this case isn't about subsistence rights, but it's about the rights of private land ownership. The co-defendant's lawyer, Miller, countered that the trail used to drive down is a right-of-way, and because of historical use, a public prescriptive easement is warranted on other parts of the Lowen land. Now it's in the judge's hands. Judge Pallenberg has a maximum of 6 months to decide whether a public prescriptive easement will be allowed. He'll also decide on a court order from the interveners, the native groups, that would prohibit the Lowens from interfering in the future. With hooligan season rapidly approaching, both sides agreed on Tuesday that subsistence users can use the spot with vehicles to harvest hooligan this year. What will happen in the future remains to be seen. In a 4-2 vote, the Haynesboro Assembly approved the 95% design plans for the Portage Cove Harbor expansion. But much of Tuesday's meeting was spent debating other topics. KHNS's Emily Files has more.
The harbor design almost went to a vote with no discussion.
Questions been called,
No. Madam Mayor, I do have some questions.
That's Assemblyman George Campbell, who called into the meeting. He was concerned that aspects like the relocation of Lookout Park and how to fund that undertaking were not included in the 95% design. Interim Borough Manager Brad Ryan said it's a multi-phase project, which is why those details are not yet drawn out. Assembly members Ron Jackson and Tresham Gregg were also apprehensive. Jackson said Lookout Park's relocation should be part of the design. Gregg had a list of concerns: the metal breakwater, the expanded parking lot, and the lack of a cost-benefit analysis.
I'm not happy about the way that objections were dealt with along the way, and they pushed aside without consideration. I'm hoping that all my fears will be unfounded and we'll have a wonderful harbor.
After about 10 minutes of conversation, the Assembly voted 4-2 to approve the harbor design, with Campbell and Gregg opposed. The other two major discussions at Tuesday's meeting had to do with remedying the borough's past errors or commitments. The borough recently lost an appeal brought forward by resident Paul Nelson. The court found that the borough wrongly charged Nelson multiple times on a nuisance abatement order. Recently, attorneys for the two parties agreed that the borough would reimburse Nelson 50% of his court costs. Jackson said that wasn't enough. He made a motion to reimburse the rest of Nelson's court fees.
We have the resources to take people to court, and they have to defend themselves if they want to. It seems unfair that we can do that, and when we make a mistake, and not have it all made fair again.
While most of the Assembly members expressed regret about the mistake, they didn't want to mess with the settlement the lawyers already agreed on. In the end, the motion was rejected. The other debate stemmed from a commitment made by previous borough manager Dave Sosa. When the Haynes Brewing Company was negotiating with the borough to purchase land for their new Main Street location, they discussed the inclusion of property tax exemptions. But that was never included in the contract. At the time, the Assembly wanted to draft a policy rather than grant exemptions business by business. Here's Campbell.
We got to consider that there was a promise made to the Haynes Brewery about giving them a tax incentive.
Assemblymember Margaret Friedenauer says it seems there were some problems with how Sosa dealt with the tax incentive discussion.
Come to find out just recently, the borough attorney, whether he's correct or not, would have had major problems with that. He said that the previous manager had no authority to try to suggest that he could use that in a contract, a property tax exemption for one single business.
Friedenauer said if a policy were to be developed now, there are questions about whether the brewery could even be included in it under state law.
I'm going to make a motion that to deal with the commitment we made the brewery, that they deal with the manager, and the manager comes up with an alternative incentive that he can legally offer them.
That brought back the question of whether the borough should offer an incentive to any one business. Jackson called it a slippery slope. But in the end, the Assembly agreed they needed to try to fulfill the promise Sosa made. In the meantime, a tax incentive policy drafted by the Government Affairs Committee will go to the Finance Committee for further review. With the brewery issue being handled separately, it's unclear whether there will be enough motivation to establish such a policy. In the next few weeks, the Assembly will hold several meetings on the budget and the borough manager and police chief search. The next regular Assembly meeting is April 26th. In Haines, I'm Emily Files.
For KHNS News, I'm Jillian Rogers. Thanks for joining us this evening. You can always listen to and read local news stories on our website at khns.org.